and welcome to your favorite bookish podcast, Fully Booked and Caffeinated. I'm Heather.
I'm Kelsey.
And today our discussion revolves around, as Reese Witherspoon says, the sexy and modern love story, 7 Days in June by Tia Williams.
Okay, Reese.
Right, because this was a Reese book club choice.
Mm-hmm.
Reese, that's like a tongue twister.
Reese's book club choice.
It's like a mantra. Anyways, what are you drinking or what coffee did you have today?
We just like invoked the spirit of Reese Witherspoon with that chant.
It's gonna appear.
Yeah. Well, actually today, well, we're recording this the day after the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
I got my free coffee from Starbucks. A tall coffee is tiny.
It's very coffee. I didn't even bother.
Yeah. But it was good because I never get like regular coffee from there anymore. I always get a latte or something. So I just got an iced coffee with oat milk and it was delicious. Good? Yeah.
I don't think I've actually had their coffee.
I used to always get their regular iced coffee and then I always got their cold brew. And now I usually just get an iced latte.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, their cold coffee is good and it's better with the oat milk because I used to get almond milk. It's better with the oat milk because it's a little bitter tasting. So the oat milk helps with that. You know what I mean? What did you have today?
Well, this morning I got a caramel cold brew with cold foam from Dunkin'.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm drinking a white chocolate mocha.
Okay.
Because I'm dragging today. Work was very busy. I was nonstop all day. And I'm just tired.
Yeah.
Just tired. A little burnt out. So.
I hear you.
Yesterday was a long day.
Yeah. Yeah. As we left Heather's house, there was a child screaming.
Yeah, she was not. That's what happens when toddlers don't take their nap.
Yeah.
Like they're supposed to.
Honestly, so relatable. Oh, I don't blame her at all.
Anyways. Cha-ching. So a little bit of background for Tia. In 1997, she moved to the Big Apple to work as a magazine beauty editor, and in 2004, she pioneered the beauty blog industry with her award-winning site, Shake Your Beauty. Later, she enjoyed a career as executive editorial director at the Estee Lauder companies. So she was, like, full-blown in, like, fashion and makeup.
Yeah.
Like, writing, I don't think, like, writing novels was on her periphery for a bit. And then her debut novel, because shocker, this is not her debut novel that we're doing. It's like her third or fourth novel.
Okay.
Good. So her debut novel, The Accidental Diva, hit the shelves in 2004.
Wow.
So she's been writing at least for the past 20 years.
Okay.
Like, this is the first time, this is the first book of hers that I've picked up.
Mm-hmm.
And in that book, received glowing coverage in popular fashion magazines and the New York Times. So it must have been kind of like maybe like a fashion novel.
Yeah, because I was kind of wondering that why she doesn't write about any of that stuff.
Yeah.
But mm-hmm. she does, just she not in did this already, book. So. Yeah.
And then she went on to co-write a makeup memoir, and then she also penned 2 young adult novels.
Oh, wow. She's all over the place.
She really, truly is. She's like, which is fine. You know, you don't have to have a niche. Pick your, who cares? Like Stephen King wrote horror and like a fantasy novel. You can mm-hmm. do what you want. In 2016, her novel, The Perfect Find, won the African American Literary Award for Best Fiction, and it garnered rave reviews in popular publications. And then in 2023, it was adapted into a film for Netflix starring Gabrielle Union.
Nice. Okay.
So that's on Netflix. I would like to read the book before I watch because that's just what I like to do.
Yeah. Agreed.
This specific novel was an instant New York Times and USA Today bestseller, and it was the June 2021 Reese's Book Club Choice. See, I have it in there. And there's actually a TV series adaptation in development with Will Packer Productions. So they actually are going to make a TV series with this one.
Okay.
And then there's a book out now, or like her most recent book, Songs About Ricky Wilde, I think it's called. That has gotten a lot of good reviews as well.
Okay.
So I also want to read that one. A few quick trigger warnings. There are scenarios that include, in this book, that include assault, suicide, self-harm, and substance abuse. Because the teen years in this book are dark.
Very dark.
Very dark. Okay, so for our story graph description, 7 days to fall in love, 15 years to forget, and 7 days to get it all back again. From the author of The Perfect Find, this is a witty, romantic, and sexy as hell new novel of two writers and their second chance at love. Brooklynite Eva Mercy is a single mom and best-selling erotica writer who is feeling pressed from all sides. Shane Hall is a reclusive, enigmatic, and award-winning literary author who, to everyone's surprise, shows up in New York. When Shane and Eva meet unexpectedly at a literary event, sparks fly, raising not only their past buried traumas, but the eyebrows of New York's Black literati. What no one knows is that 20 years earlier, teenage Eva and Shane spent one crazy torrid week madly in love. They may be pretending that everything is fine now, but they can't deny their chemistry or the fact that they've been secretly writing to each other in their books ever since. Over the next 7 days, in the middle of a steamy Brooklyn summer, Eva and Shane reconnect, but Eva's not sure how she can trust the man who broke her heart, and she needs to get him out of New York so that her life can return to normal. But before Shane disappears again, there are a few questions she needs answered. With its keen observations of Black life and the condition of modern motherhood, as well as the consequences of motherlessness, 7 Days in June is by turns humorous, warm, and deeply sensual.
Okay. I mean, it really sounds like our kind of book, for sure. Two writers.
I know. Right up my alley. So this does kind of, this book does have like a dual timeline, but not really. Like it's a very, it's more like small flashback scenes.
Yeah. Because there's only a couple.
Yeah. It wasn't very heavy like dual timelines, but you also do get the point of view from both Eva and Shane and a couple like secondary characters. Like Cece had a couple POVs. Audra, her daughter, had a couple POVs.
The mom, I think, had one or two.
A small one or two. Yeah. But mainly it's mainly from, I would say, like 90% Eva and Shane, but even more Eva.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely like 75% Eva.
Yeah. Eva Mercy is a successful erotica novelist who was thrust into the Black literary writing scene after winning a contest for her manuscript, Cursed, a Vampire Witch Love Story, when she was just 19. I thought this was funny that, like, they're making her a fantasy erotica author.
Yeah.
That, like, kind of came out of left field for me. Like, I wasn't expecting that.
And that there's 14 books already.
And I'm like, so this is, like, True Blood. Mm-hmm. On steroids, probably.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so funny because not has nothing to do with the book, but every time that like the two main characters have sex, he's like ripped away to like another time frame.
Yeah,
and
I'm like transported to the other side of the universe.
Basically, like climax, and he's just poof gone.
Yeah,
which I mean, fun for everybody, I guess.
Honestly,
don't have to deal with the the after. So she's
the walk of shame. It's literally time travel.
Like you said, this series has 14 books in it, and it actually has an upcoming film adaptation. And the director wants to make the characters white for box office reasons, which is not what Eva wants, since the book's blackness is an essential part of the series. When this like came up, I was like, oh, we're like going there. Like that also came out of left field.
Yeah, and I didn't like it. Because she immediately caved because she's been waiting so long for the right director.
Mm-hmm. I feel like a lot of her, like 75% of the book is Eva just kind of giving in to things and not standing up for herself until like the very end of the book.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that. It's very, she's very much a people pleaser.
Yeah.
And kind of goes with like the easiest option that's going to get the results that she needs, aka mm-hmm. money or, you know, whatever. And then that's her whole character growth, which I'm sure we'll get into, is just her finally being like, oh, wait, I don't have to just do the easiest thing.
There's like at one point, just kind of like a light switch goes off and, mm-hmm. you know, she explains that she doesn't want to write anymore for Curse. She doesn't care about telling everyone about like her debilitating migraines. She's just like, you know what? I'm going to lay it all on the field, just mm-hmm. out of nowhere. So while participating in a Brooklyn literary panel, Eva has a surprise reunion with the elusive award-winning author Shane Hall. Shane is best known for his literary fiction set in the same nameless and low-income neighborhood. His most famous work is Eight. So Shane apparently is like this author who, he's like a myth, is like the vibe that you get as a reader. And this is because he's an alcoholic. Mm-hmm. And so he just is never sober. And he doesn't seem to want to communicate with people.
Yeah, he's like a recluse.
Yeah.
But when he does leave the house, he's an absolute drunken mess.
Yeah.
But also he's a literary genius.
Literary genius.
Like, he's not writing erotica, fantasy erotica. He's writing the great literary fiction of our time.
Mm-hmm. But now that he's sober, he has this, he has like writer's block.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, I can only write when I'm drunk. And now that I'm kind of faced with this, now life as being sober and having to write from my sober mentality, it's hard.
I mean, look at almost every musician who's had substance abuse issues.
Like Ernest Hemingway too. Like he was, yeah. So it's just, I can't even imagine. If you create so much of your work when you're high or drunk and you're not, and you're in a totally different like playing field of your mind, of course, trying to come up with that creativity when you're sober is going to be, it's not the time when you're writing what you, when you're in your drunken or high state, you don't remember. There's a, you don't remember at least like 5% of what you had done during that.
And there's less of that self criticism, self consciousness. Like you're just kind of letting it flow.
Exactly.
So that's a big part of it too.
Yeah. So Eva is shocked to see Shane. And then the readers learn that Eva met Shane in high school. And when they met, as teenagers, they felt this strange, extraordinary connection and just end up spending a week just of like pure passion as teenagers, which, you know that I don't love that, and nor do you, but I did like the mutual like vulnerability between the two characters.
Yes.
That I liked. I didn't love that it was, you know, I don't read these books to read about like teenagers having sex.
Yeah.
And then so during those 7 days in June, the two reveal their pain and coping mechanisms. So for Shane, like we said, his is drugs and alcohol, but for Eva, it was self-harm. And then at the end of the week, Eva almost overdosed and Shane disappears. So during this, these 7 days, which Eva approaches Shane, first of all, because he's a beautiful boy. And she is like a, she calls herself like a freak and an outcast. So she's like, if I go up to this beautiful boy, you know, nothing will come of it. He won't like me in a romantic way. So this is kind of like a safe bet, but it goes in the opposite. It turns out the exact opposite. And the two of them just house up in some Korean family's house that Shane knows because he sells drugs to the young, she's like in her 20s, right?
Yeah, she's because like she graduated also, college.
But also because I think she's also like obsessed with Shane a little bit.
Yeah, it's very weird.
Yeah, I didn't quite, even she had a POV.
Yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah, they just went from zero to would die for each other in approximately 2 minutes.
It was a very intense scenario. And it's like, it's believable to an extent because I can agree that you can meet someone, especially when you're sharing, when you're so, both being so vulnerable and you're in these spaces of your life where things are shit. And then you meet someone else who's like, life is equally shit.
Mm-hmm.
And then they obviously have like a mutual attraction to each other. Mm-hmm. So I get it. Like I do.
Yes. But then also they both have a terrible time trusting people and letting people in, and they've been so mistreated and just gone through so much even though they're so young that it kind of, that's where it felt like a little too much.
Yeah.
And then they just, we never find out about his drug selling business over here where he has every kind of drug you could ever imagine in just ridiculous quantities.
And like, where does he get it from?
No idea.
Yeah. So Eva ends up overdosing and she comes to in like a psychiatric hospital because obviously they also noticed that she was self-harming. So she gets put on like a psych hold and then Shane is just gone. But like the big thing is prior to the overdose, the two of them have like this conversation about how they'll never leave the other one. Like they're like ride or dies now for each other.
Mm-hmm. And like his worst fear is going back to kid prison.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, I'll never let that happen again. And then she is suicidal. And he basically says, I'll never let you do that to yourself. And I'll make your life so amazing that you'll never want to do that to yourself. Which,
yeah, they both want to save each other is yeah. essentially what it comes down to. So when she realizes that he's gone, it's like, obviously it's like a big slap in the face because he lied to her. Mm-hmm. You know, he made these promises under the, you know, illusion under like alcohol and drugs fuel in mm-hmm. his conversations, but still. So it's now 15 years later and Shane is just about 2 years sober and Eva has found pain management for her debilitating migraines. Cause that's like another thing why she was also big on drugs is because she has like these terrible, terrible migraines,
mm-hmm.
which I've never experienced it, but both my mom and my sister have like really bad migraines. Like they're mm-hmm. both on medication for them. So I can only imagine.
Yeah.
And I can only yeah. imagine like being even though this is like a fake scenario, being like a young teenager with an absentee mom and no father, and you just have to like take care of yourself and no one's really taking care of you. Mm-hmm. And you have like such pain
mm-hmm.
for like days on end.
Even as an adult, this is such like this whole social context of not only is it an invisible illness or an invisible disease, so people can't see the horrible pain that she's in. When she finally shares with someone, they're like, oh, you want an Advil? And she's like, I literally have to inject myself with pain meds just to be able to open my eyes. And the fact of, you know, she tried for years and years and years to get a doctor to listen to her and take her seriously because it was an invisible disease and because she's a woman. And we all know that women have a very hard time with their... She is also a Black woman. Yes. And Black women especially have a very hard time with doctors taking them seriously. I mean, the earliest scientists believed that Black people couldn't feel pain. So that's why they would operate on them. Come on now.
Yep.
Come on.
That's why it's also Black women, pregnant Black women are like the most susceptible to having like hemorrhaging issues and mm-hmm. dying during childbirth because
yeah, their rate of death is so much higher.
It's so, so much higher. So, you know, again, like you just said, like in the same scenario, like no one's going to take her seriously and she's got an invisible disease. That's one strike
mm-hmm.
and she's Black. So that's like the mm-hmm. biggest strike of them all.
Mm-hmm.
So during their reunion, the two admit that their stories were written about and for the other. So basically, when they both separate, Eva writes Cursed and Shane is the sexy vampire.
Which is so weird.
And then Gia is like her as like the sexy witch.
Mm-hmm.
And so mm-hmm. hers is kind of like, again, I get it, like, you understand now why Sebastian's character, after they have sex, he's just poof gone. Because that's mm-hmm. like kind of what Shane did. And for Shane, he like writes he writes 8, which is about like this really strong willed, you know, young girl, which is like his love note to Eva.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
And it's crazy because Eva wrote this book at 19 years old, obviously didn't expect anything to come of it.
It's like, and then she logged on the live journal real quick. She's like, I'm just going to write a fanfic and we're going to see what happens. It's a yes. fanfic about my life, but we're going to see what happens.
And then it just completely took over her life.
100%. Once they begin to reconnect, their old intimacy strikes up again and they cannot resist the magnetic pull to each other. It's pretty instantaneous. like, they see each other that first time on the panel, and there's, like, a crackle. Like, mm-hmm. everyone, all, like, the audience members are on the edge of their seat watching them interact with each other, because Shane is infamous for saying three words, and he goes on, like, an eloquy about Eva and her curse series and her as a black author. Like, he just goes off.
Yeah, and everyone there is like, we don't even know who this woman is. And he's like, how could you not? Like, her fan fiction, blah, 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 blah. And then she's like, what the fuck? Like, why did you just do that?
Yeah. And so there is, like, one little scenario where prior to Eva finally being like, what the fuck, they have a little sexual moment in, like, a, what was it, like, a calming room?
Okay, we need to talk about this dream place.
Yeah,
dream house. I don't remember what it was called. Dream house. So, first of all, this thing sounds absolutely crazy. And it's just basically a place to go to relax and meditate and take a little nap in the middle of the day. And they're together, so they get a private room. I'm sorry, but being in this room with this soothing music and the incense and the soft lighting, I'm not trying to bang.
No.
I'm trying to chill. To
relax.
Yeah.
The one spa that Eric and I went to last year, they have, like, a nap room.
Yeah, like, that's for napping.
Not for, like, one person. Like, there's multiple people in there. So shenanigans cannot occur. But, yeah. So they are real.
Well, and then they're making this huge deal about how they're not supposed to bang in there, and there's no locks on the doors and everything. I was waiting for someone to walk in.
I know. Like, you knew it was, like, coming. And, like, basically, like, they literally climax, and Eva's like, I'm out. She just, like, dips. Like, she, you know, and so, like, of course Shane's like, what the fuck? But also he's like, I'll take whatever I can get.
Mm-hmm.
So Eva finally is like, I need to know what happened, like, on that last day in June, and why, like, you disappeared. And it's revealed to Eva that when she overdosed, Shane couldn't revive her, and he was terrified. And so he actually calls her mother, Lizette, because during her time at the house, Lizette keeps calling Eva, and her phone, she just leaves her phone off into a kitchen plugged in still, but, like, doesn't even acknowledge that it's there. But Eva has a really tumultuous relationship with her. Her mother has had a steady string of abusive boyfriends, and when Lizette finds one that promises her a new life, she just picks up everything and relocates her and Eva to a new city with really no thought at all for her daughter and what it's doing to her. She's very selfish in that way. And this adversely affects her relationship with Lizette, since Eva's pretty much left alone all the time and takes care of herself. And she's also put in these terrible situations because the mom dates these disgusting men that are like, oh, fresh meat, bet you're good.
Mm-hmm. You know, and she never
underage girls.
Yes, and she never outright says how often this happens, but it's implied,
it's that it's,
that it's, yeah, often, that it's with most of these deadbeat boyfriends.
You know, it's like she's, you know, 17 years old, eight, you know, even younger than that. It's even like prior to, like, this, where the timeline of this book, it's obviously been happening before that as well. Mm-hmm. So, like, she's like, what, 14, 15 years old, like, having to, like, fight off these men because, like, her mom is, like, dead asleep upstairs. Mm-hmm. And it's also that situation where you would get the vibe that if Lizette caught the guy, or Eva, you know, cried wolf about it, she would just be like, it's fine, you mm-hmm. know, because she wants to make sure that she's taken care of. So it's like one of those, like, selfish.
She would 100% take the guy's side and blame Eva and say, you did something to make them do that to you.
You should have worn that, or exactly, you should have said this, or, you know,
done because that, she is exactly jealous of her daughter.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
And it's disgusting.
Mm-hmm. So after Eva finds out about this, she calls her mom, and Lizette says that she believed that Shane hurt Eva, and so she turned him into the police. So now this was, like, what we said before, like, Eva's, what she promised would never happen. And this is also why he fell off the face of the earth with no contact, because he was immediately sent to prison,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then, like, he got out of prison and he obviously felt like he couldn't find her, because I'm sure he felt like he was not good enough for her. And then the fact that, like, her mom turned her in, and then he's also battling his own demons, and you can kind of tell he wanted to try to make himself better.
Mm-hmm.
It took him over 10 years to like get sober.
Well, and he didn't know the situation that Eva had with her mom, because Eva didn't talk about it. So he didn't know if she was going to believe him or take the mom's side or whatever. So he just didn't reach out.
Yeah. So once Eva confirms all this with Lizette, she starts up her steamy relationship with Shane again. And the two are like very clearly like madly in love. Like they go from 0 to 100 real quick.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about this one. The sex in this book is very tasteful. It's not like raunchy. It's not like Butcher and Blackbird or, you know, it's like this. They're very, very tasteful. They're very minor. They don't go into too much detail. So this was like good for you. This was like a good.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't like my shit.
Well, also, they just didn't drag on and on. I hate when a sex scene is like 10 pages long.
I know.
Like, we get it.
The buildup. Yeah. No, there was zero buildup. They're like,
oh, there was negative buildup. They didn't even have the door open and he was already inside of her. Like,
so of course, like Eva still has a fear that Shane will disappear from her life again. And so she's like a little worried, because then Shane ends up building. This is one of my favorite things about the book, was the connection that he has with her daughter, Audra. Because for one, Shane is so in love and obsessed with Eva that in return, when he meets Audra, who's like this little version of Eva, he's like, you fucking made that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm obsessed with your daughter. Not even like in a creepy way. And I'd even take it in like a creepy way. Mm-mm. Like, he's just like so infatuated with the idea of Audra because it's Eva, you know, and it's almost like Eva's chance to like give Audra the childhood that she never had. And so it's, she gets to, you know, he gets to like see Eva in like a different light. And it's clear that both Eva and Shane want the three of them to create like a new family unit and make it into something that neither of them like really ever had. Because even though Eva was married previously, it was kind of like a lavender marriage. Like they weren't really into each other. It was just kind of like
friends.
Yeah. And then they made like obviously like a beautiful child. And then also like her ex couldn't handle Eva at her worst when she was sick. It's kind of like, I didn't sign up for that. He's like, I signed up for a wife that's going to want to go on like hiking trips and be active all the time and not be down and out for weeks on end.
Mm-hmm.
And she doesn't even get mad at him for it. It doesn't even seem like. She's just kind of like, I think she's so used to people probably leaving her realistically that there's not really any bad feelings.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a really good, they co-parent really well.
Yeah.
From the book, like Audra stays with her during the school year and then goes to California, or as it's called, Daddlefornia.
And there's no like jealousy that they have for each other from, you know, the time spent with the other one. It just seems like a really healthy co-parenting relationship. And it also seems like he didn't go about it in a hurtful way.
Yeah.
Because even though that is a very hard thing to hear, and she does deserve someone who's going to help take care of her.
Mm-hmm.
She wasn't upset with him about that.
No. And then for Shane, on the other foot for him is, you know, he's never really known family because he's been in foster homes his entire life. And then at age 8, he's in a car accident that kills like his adoptive mother, and like he survived. And then the dad obviously places the guilt on the kid, which like that's like fucked up in general.
Mm-hmm.
So then he gets placed in foster homes and he's bounced around. And so now that's why he becomes like who he is. And he kind of feels the same thing, like no one ever wanted him. The morning that Audra was traveling to California to spend the summer with her dad, Shane is supposed to meet them at brunch, and he fails to show up. So Eva is automatically closed off again. She's like, I should not have, like, I made a mistake. I let him in too quickly. And Shane explains that he missed the brunch because a teen that he was looking out for ended up getting shot and killed. A 13-year-old boy.
This destroyed me.
Destroy.
I loved Ty so much. Them texting back and forth, and he's like, I just want to ask this girl to go to Cold Stone. Why are you being so weird? Like, oh my God, I just loved him so much.
But I love that this is kind of part of Shane's character arc, is when he became sober, he kind of made it a point that every school district he goes to, he finds the kid that was like him. mm-hmm. and tries to be like a big brother to them kind of scenario and keeps tabs on them and or is even a girl. I think even one of yeah. the kids was a girl, so it doesn't even matter the sex. And he's just like, you know, keeps tabs on them and tries to like lead them onto the right path. And he's successful sometimes. You know, it seems like he's successful like most of the yeah. time.
But he also acknowledges that he knows he's getting too close.
He does. Yeah.
And he knows that it's not necessarily a good situation that he's putting himself in, but he can't help it.
Yeah, because it's kind of, I feel like I might have written this down, or this might have just been something I thought when I was reading, but it's kind of like if you're a binge eater and then you stop doing that, you'll find something else to become addicted to. So his addiction from alcohol went to an addiction of trying to like save. Like it was just like an addiction transfer. That's the word I was looking for. That's basically what this is. So he didn't really do the work to like not for him to fully understand why he's doing what he's doing.
Mm-hmm. Which he also acknowledges.
Yeah, exactly. He's like,
I know that I am addicted to a new thing. And then the running could not be me.
Exactly. That's what it is, like the addiction transfer. So they both decide it would be best to spend some time apart. Eva wants to begin the real book she wants to write, which is about her family legacy, which I wish there was more of this in the book. I would have loved more about her family legacy, because just like having like this strong black woman from Louisiana, like I would have loved more of the bayou.
Yeah.
Like, I would have loved that. And then Shane still needs to discover who he is as sober Shane. But they still kind of like interact with each other because originally Shane was going to go with Eva to Louisiana and like he was going to do like the research with her. And then once he misses out on the brunch, she's like, I'm going to go by myself, which I'm kind of happy she did. Because I think that she like needed to do that. And she discovers all this stuff about our family, which I think has a more meaningful background to it since she was by herself.
Mm-hmm.
But the two do eventually reunite. Because Cece, their interfering agent, sets them up on basically like a surprise date. So she tells Eva that it's a birthday party for her husband. And she tells Shane that it's like a literary event that she needs him to attend to.
Mm-hmm.
And so they both show up at this restaurant in Atlanta.
Cece is so extra that she literally flies them both out to Atlanta so that they can meet at this pretend.
I love it. It was amazing.
So good.
And so they decide to give the relationship another chance because the love they have is undeniable and the pull to each other clearly can't ever be broken. Because even like the time apart that they had, which was very short, by the way, like they still couldn't stop talking.
It was like each other. 2 months.
Exactly. So yeah, the end. They end up happily ever after.
Of course.
So what do you think initially drew Eva and Shane together when they were teenagers?
The way you said it was perfect that she approached him because she didn't think that there was going to be any like attraction getting in the way. And then once she starts talking to him, she realizes that he's weird like her and he's kind of quirky and he's standoffish and he doesn't have any friends. And then I don't know how it jumps to the next. I can only pin it on teenage hormones.
Yeah, there's definitely a huge gap that I think we're kind of left with trying to piece together as a reader. And there's not enough substance to fill that gap.
Mm-hmm.
Because they do. They go from like from acquaintances for 5 seconds to like horny teenagers in the house.
Mm-hmm.
And it's clearly you can tell that Shane just feels kind of like this kismet to Eva and that she's also doesn't have anybody. So he for whatever reason wants to be like her savior, which seems like off brand for him right now. I don't know if like just because of how the connection he felt to Eva so instantaneously makes him want to become that person.
Yeah.
Like, clearly, I guess that's the only way to look at it. Because Eva kind of seems like chill about it. like, I feel like it's, you don't get it from Eva's standpoint right away.
Yeah,
it's
because she's that, like, even
Shane is like obsessed with her first.
Yes. And she even says, like, oh, I can't sleep with him right away because then he'll leave. Yeah. Like, she's not looking at as, looking at it as, no matter what, we're going to be together.
Yeah.
Like, she knows that this could end just like everything else ends.
Exactly. So it's like an interest. It's actually kind of interesting to think about it, like, now that we're talking about it, that it is like boy falls first.
Mm-hmm.
But boy falls first out of nowhere, like within 24 hours with no real story.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's really not enough story there. But sometimes, listen, we watch The Bachelor. People fall in love on the first first day.
Sure do. And then they never see each other for 15 years. So
exactly. So while they both wrote wildly different genres, why was writing novels the right career path for both of them?
Well, I think that's really a testament to how they grew up, because they had a really hard time talking about their feelings. And not only do they not have anyone to talk to, but it was their way to channel all of that angst and pain. And yeah, I think it totally makes sense that they were both writers.
I agree, because they both grew up having no outlets, no people to talk to. So this was the only way that they could express their feelings. So it was the right move. But seeing Eva go into the fantasy erotica realm wasn't not on my bingo card. If this was real, that would not be where I thought that I was know. Going.
And the funny thing is, I loved the scenes with her and her fans, and how she says, you know, it's just these like obnoxious white ladies.
I know.
Just making.
I immediately thought of
microaggressions.
Like yeah. The Twilight moms. And I'm like, this is so real though. Like, old white women love this shit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I will be that old white woman. It's gonna be me.
It's true. It's true.
What does the fated week together as teenagers say about the fact that these best-selling novels were inspired by the other? So basically, like, this small time of frame caused them to write these best-selling novels.
I mean, I don't know. I have a lot of issues with this week that they had together.
Like, there had to have been, but then again, it's like you have to, like, I think it's amazing for them that this has happened. But like, when you think about it realistically, they were under so much influence of alcohol and drugs and sex and mm-hmm. just pain. So how can you truly decipher what feeling was what?
Mm-hmm.
And I guess maybe the books were the outlet for them to kind of work through that, since they only had that like week together, I guess is like a way you could look at it.
Yeah.
That was how they sorted through it.
Yeah, and it definitely makes sense from Eva's side, because she didn't know what had really happened, and mm-hmm. because she finally thought that she could trust someone, and then they completely disappeared, and, you know, she felt even more lost than before.
Mm-hmm.
So I do get that part. Yeah. Next question.
Right. When they reconnect as adults and immediately pick up where they left off, what were your thoughts on their romantic relationship or why they were so connected?
Yeah, I have a lot of thoughts. Number one, in that nice summary that you read, Eva was like, I have a lot of questions that need answers. Really? Because no questions were asked. It was one question, and it was after you guys had slept together a couple times. Okay. There were no questions asked. There was no, like, she says, oh, you're such an asshole, like, you owe me, and he's like, yeah, and that's it. And then one thing that really bothered me is that she has this amazing relationship with her daughter,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, they spend so much time together and all this stuff, and then her daughter's literally leaving for Datafornia,
that might be right.
Datafornia, perhaps. Anyway, so she's leaving for California for the whole summer. And instead of spending every day with her daughter, Eva is out gallivanting and banging at his house, which bothered me. And then the fact that even though Audra is the one who invites him to the brunch, the fact that Eva insisted or that agreed that he should come and stuff, I just didn't like it. I didn't think that it fit with their characters. I don't care how much you love him.
Yeah.
She would not have put anyone above her daughter.
Yeah, I feel that too. And it's kind of like that, it's like love blindness. Like it just, she's finally reconnected with this man that she, number one, probably thought she was never going to see again. Mm-hmm. And she wasn't expecting to have like these huge feelings. And I think like, it's just kind of like when you're so in it, in that moment, you truly just don't acknowledge anything else. Yeah. Around you.
But like, and you're a grown up.
And you know, oh, I know. And like, and she knows she's making the wrong decision, but like, she can't stop herself from doing it.
She's about to have an entire summer by herself.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I know.
Yeah. You can't wait 3 days? Mm-hmm. And then he can move in with you.
I know. And I do agree, like, Audra offering him to come to like their special brunch was really weird. But then it's like,
when I look at it, I get that more.
When I look at it from Audra's perspective, especially the argument that her and Eva have earlier in the book where Eva's like, I basically am not living my life because you're my life. Mm-hmm. And she's also, Eva's also not trying to make Audra feel guilty about that, which obviously you're a teenager. Your mom's going to say that to you. You're going to take it to heart and like feel like you're the reason. But like Eva's like, literally like, you are my life and that's enough for me. Mm-hmm. In like the nicest way possible, and I completely mean that, no negative tone to it at all. Like literally, you're all it for me. I don't need to be in love, you know. She has dildos and toys, and she almost dies from one. So like literally, like it's fine. She doesn't need a she truly doesn't need a man. Mm-hmm. And like I think that if she hadn't reconnected with Shane, I don't think Eva would ever have like dated another man.
Yeah, yeah.
Like she's just and that's
why
much...
I totally get her. I get Audra's point of view because she's worried about her mom for that reason because she never knew that she felt that she had been holding back.
Yeah.
And even though Eva's happy with her life, obviously, like you said, it's hard for Audra to feel that. So if she can, you know, set up this relationship between Eva and Shane before she leaves for the summer, she'll feel a lot better that her mom is banging it out while she's gone, you know?
I know. There was one quote that I took because I really liked it. And I guess this actually kind of gives you an idea of where Shane's head was at when they first met. So Eva says, "I know what I was like." "You don't," Shane went dead serious. "You burst into my solitude, demanding to be seen. You were overwhelming, just wild and weird and brilliant. And I never had a choice. I liked everything about you, even the scary parts. I wanted to drown in your fucking bathwater," which, hey, Saltburn.
I know, right?
I really thought of Saltburn. Now I'm only going to think about Saltburn when there's like a bathwater reference. Blech.
Gross. But yeah, I could see why Shane is a good writer. I get it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think that that's like, there was no closed book for them. There was no closure. And I don't think any of them ever wanted closure. So Shane is like, literally like, "I'll wait forever for you." Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah, because that no ifs, was ands, or buts
about it.
I can't think of the word I'm looking for. That was like a turning point in their lives or an event that they could pinpoint.
Yeah.
This is when.
Like my life changed.
This is when everything changed. Yeah. And at one point he says like he had been with a lot of girls over the years, but he always compared them to Eva, which is weird because she was a child at the time of their week together. But all right, we already got past that. Okay.
So we talked a little bit about like Eva's relationship with her mom and then, you know, comparing it to Audra's. Why do you think Eva rewrites her mother's narrative as a feminist beauty queen and withholds the truth from about her past to Audra?
I don't know. That was hard. That was really hard because I think that Eva had, she wanted to see the best in her mom, even though her mom was shitty. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's the same reason that she didn't believe at first that her mom had sent Shane away, that she wanted to pin it on Shane. And so I think that she realized how much that would affect Audra if if she knew about all of those things. But it is crazy and amazing. And like, this is something to definitely Eva's age and Eva's generation, which is ours, that her mother and her grandmother and her great grandmother, they kept passing on this trauma to each other and this kind of jealousy and competition and issues with men and all this stuff.
She's
and
breaking Eva, the generational cycle, which exactly. is like literally like what our generation is trying to do now as mm-hmm. women. Like I see that so, so much in like the motherhood community on social media that moms, and even just like personally with moms I'm friends with now, like we're all trying so hard to break the trauma that we've adhered to,
mm-hmm.
but that our moms that went through and their mm-hmm. moms went through. Like I can go back through like my generation on my mom's side and I can see all the crazy fucked up shit they all went through
mm-hmm.
and I can see why they're the way they are. And so it's a testament to like me as a mom to know that I'm going to break that and I'm not going to allow that, you know, for Millie to deal with what I had to deal with. And there's so many of my other mom friends and other just moms out there that are just trying so hard to break the cycle.
Mm-hmm. And it's in so many different aspects. I mean, it's real hard, horrible trauma. It's mm-hmm. diet culture.
Yeah.
It's financial mm-hmm. independence. Mm-hmm. Like it is so many different things and so many different scales of that trauma, but that's exactly what it is. Like she is breaking this. She wants to have good communication with her daughter. She wants to have that great relationship. And I think that's just why I love Audra so much.
Mm-hmm. I'll like never forget when I turned like 18 or 19, maybe even like in my early 20s, both my grandma like congratulated me. She's like, you did like what your mom and I didn't do, because my grandma was 15 when she had her first child. And then my mom was 17 when she had me and my dad was 15. Mm-hmm. So it's like, not that boys looked at me, but it's fine. But like, you know, it's fine. I was a weird outcast in high school. I was probably what Eva was like in high school. And so, you know, like she was very much like, I'll never forget. Like she said that to me. She's like, I'm so proud of you for like not being a pregnant teen, which is like such a low bar.
Bar is in hell.
And I shouldn't even be congratulated for that, but I understand where she was coming from, because mm-hmm. both her and my mom kind of altered their lives because my grandma only had 15 years of her life as a child.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my mom only had 17. Like neither of them could go to college. Not that my grandma would go to college, but like my mom couldn't go to college. Like,
and all of this is just so weird because you're literally a teen mom, even mm-hmm. though you are in your 30s. Like you mm-hmm. are so young to have a child. And they did this.
I know.
20 years earlier.
I know. It's like, it's so insane. So like, I do understand too, like why Eva wants to kind of write this narrative of Lizette to Audra. Because I also don't think she wants to expose Audra to the trauma and the trials and tribulations that she had to go through. She's mm-hmm. definitely trying to create this euphoric atmosphere mm-hmm. for Audra that everything is like rainbows and sunshine
and
everything is good.
The empowerment aspect too.
Yeah.
Like she wants Audra to be this independent feminist mm-hmm. badass mm-hmm. that Lizette never was. Mm-mm. And she also knows that she's not really going to, that Lizette isn't really going to have a relationship with Audra. So she's okay with lying about it. And they see each other, talk on the phone twice a year.
Yeah, they don't like see, like, I don't even know that Audra's even met Lizette. Like, it's all like, it just seems like all like telephone communication.
Mm-hmm.
So, because like Lizette's out there still like pulling the same shtick that she's been pulling from like day one. You know, now it's like with dancers. She has like a dancing school and like white pageant moms. School,
which is so funny.
All right, last but not least, do you think that Eva and Shane's relationship will last?
Of course not. But so is the way of these books.
Do you think that they would?
I think it would be very, very hard but I think that they would, because I think Shane would take it very seriously because of the family aspect and because he knows that it's no light thing for Audra to be accepting him and for Eva to be introducing them to each other. But I do think that Eva would really push him away at first, understandably. But yeah, I mean, because Audra is such a supportive daughter, I think that would make the difference. Because mm-hmm. we know love ain't enough. You know?
Definitely not. There was one quote that I really liked that is very with the times currently. And we kind of like touched base on it a little bit in the very beginning. So it was, "Women are expected to absorb traumas, both subtle and loud, and move on. Shoulder the weight of the world. But when the world fucks with us, the worst thing we can do is bury it. Embracing it makes us strong enough to fuck the world right back."
I loved that. I read it like 3 times because I loved it so much. It's true. And yeah, like we touched on it with the people not really understanding like women's pain and stuff. But it is so true. And, you know, people want to say women are so emotional and they can't handle things and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, because that's what society has told us, that we can't handle things and that we can't speak our minds and that we can't take ownership and be proud of ourselves.
Yeah. Why do men have the right to fight back and not be looked at, you know, as being hysterical or being too loud and opinionated? But as women, we can't fight for what we believe.
And especially, I mean, as with most things, that is even more amplified for Black women, that, you know, God forbid they try to stand up for themselves and then they're the angry Black woman, you know, and they're some stereotype. And then all of a sudden, no one listens to them. No one takes them seriously because they've lost all their credibility, you know, and it's horrible because there is such a fine line between standing up for yourself and fucking the world right back and losing your audience.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
We love a subtle feminist message.
We do. So we haven't done this in a long time, but we did do typecasting.
Okay, wait, I have one more thing we have to talk about.
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I got to talk more about, I know I've already harped on it, but this week as teenagers, as I was reading it, first of all, I was like, this is dark. Like, this is extremely dark, way darker than I thought it was going to be. And I was, triggered isn't the right word, but I was just shocked by the depiction of self-harm.
Yeah.
The depiction of suicide ideation. And, you know, as like someone who has struggled with those things when I was younger, as a teenager, it just didn't feel real to me. And I'm not saying that it's not. And I'm not saying that some people's experiences aren't exactly like this. But I would be curious to know where the author got that framework, because it felt, it was so raw, and it just felt off. I don't know. I don't know how to explain it except for the fact of, like, with self-harm and with suicidal ideation, it is such a personal and lonely thing. And then the fact that it turned into something that they were kind of sharing, that felt kind of weird. And then the fact that she literally said, "I stayed alive for you," that ripped me apart, because that's the most horrifying thing that you could hear from someone, that they base their will to live on the actions of another person.
I know.
So it almost, I mean, it took me out of the story for sure.
Yeah. Because there was, like, the scene, like, when they're outside and at the empty pool, and, like, she's like, "I'm just gonna, like, fall in," and he, like, rips her back from, like, the, you know, because he's just like, "Don't fucking do that," you know, because, you know, because it was very, you're seeing into the mind of Eva in a way that you aren't expecting, especially since this is a romance novel.
Exactly.
And you're not expecting it to get that dark.
And it was such a teenage portrayal too, because yeah. of course his response is, oh, she wants more drugs, give her more drugs. Oh, mm-hmm. I'm going to promise her that she'll never feel pain again so that she won't want to hurt herself. And it was mm-hmm. just such a teenage response, and it just felt so dangerous and icky, and I didn't like it.
I think that's completely valid.
Like, it didn't have to be that dark, you know?
It didn't. And I agree. It was kind of not fit for the rest of the story. Because one of the things I loved about this book was all the pop culture references mm-hmm. and how light and fun it was. And so when you're hit with these dark moments, especially out of left field, you're kind of like, wow. And like, so I completely can understand why you wouldn't have enjoyed that.
Yeah. But then, you know, like you said, the fact that it was just a few brief flashbacks, I did like that. I don't think I would have been able to handle it if this was real, true dual timelines.
Yeah.
But yeah, it just didn't feel consistent with the rest of the book.
Completely, I get that.
All right. Take it away.
We're doing Dreamcast. I'm going to do my best to bring these back because they were fun, and then I don't know, and then I just forgot.
Yeah.
Like everything else I do in life, I forget. I have all these great ideas, and then they, poof, they're gone.
Well, also the fact that almost every freaking book gets made into gets made into a movie or TV. It's like, then we can actually compare with how the casting is compared to ours.
Yeah. I know this is kind of like cheating because these people have already done so many movies together, but I just feel like this is a perfect story for them because of how dark it got.
Okay.
So I would do Michael B. Jordan as Shane Hall, and I would do Tessa Thompson as Eva Mercy.
Hold, please.
They've done like the Creed movies together. And then she was in Thor. She's the Valkyrie. And she was in Westworld.
Oh, okay. I know her. Mm-hmm. She would be really good for Eva. I could see that.
Yeah, and I've already seen them like have chemistry together on screen.
Mm-hmm.
So I could, and I just feel like Michael B. Jordan is such a broody man.
That man is so fine.
He fits in well for Shane. So I was trying to think of like a more like curvy actress for Eva, but I couldn't picture who I'd want. But I like Tessa as well.
Mm-hmm. I chose for Eva, I chose Halle Bailey. Is that how you say
Yeah.
Even though she's a little too young for this.
Yeah.
But I just felt like with the curly hair and that I feel like she is gorgeous, mm-hmm. but she's not conventionally gorgeous.
Yeah.
And I felt like that was kind of Eva's vibe too. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then for Shane, I picked Michael Ealy.
Oh, yes. Okay. Yeah, he would make a good Shane Hall for sure.
And he has the light eyes, yeah. which is the whole thing with the vampire.
Uh-huh. Yeah. He'd definitely be a good choice.
Yeah.
He kind of reminds me of Marshall from Love is Blind.
Yeah, because Marshall has the light eyes too. Yeah. But Marshall is too sweet looking to be Shane. Shane needs a little edge.
Ratings.
Yes.
All right. So our ratings are out of cameo rings because this was a cute little
cameo I loved that. Ring.
And then Eva, like, you know, passing it down to Audra. So it was like, you know, a cute generational thing that we're okay with.
Yeah. And then the fact that she saw it in all the pictures mm-hmm. was amazing.
She was like, wow, like all these women. This ring that I thought was just like this cheap thing my mom had is actually has a lot of representation and meaning.
Mm-hmm.
So how many cameo rings did you give it?
I gave it 3.5 cameo rings. I already talked about what I didn't like mm-hmm. about it. I also felt that the pacing was very weird because the ending felt rushed. I mean, like you said, I wish that we got more of her Louisiana trip, but also they glazed over Ty's death so quickly. And I just felt like that should have been a much bigger plot point and we should have seen more from that. But other than that, I loved the way this was written. I really like her writing. I love the pop culture references, like you said. And also, just all of the witty banter between characters. Audra, written as a character, was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I loved her so much.
Yeah, she was one of my favorite secondary characters.
Yeah, so it's like I definitely loved a lot about this book, but I had issues with the plot.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I definitely want to read that other one by her that came out recently.
I would definitely read more of her novels.
Yeah.
I think she's a really good romance author. And just the way that the way that she just writes, like, it pops.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny. And I like when the author, especially when it's, like, the female lead, can be funny. And she's not just, like, morose and sad all the time.
And also not just sarcastic.
Yeah.
Because there are other ways to be funny.
Yeah. When I actually gave this 4.5. I might drop it down to 4 because, like, obviously, you know, how I feel when I finish a book sometimes is different after really we talk about it. But, like, I agree. I think the reason why I didn't give it 5 stars when I first read it was because I didn't love the gap between, like, them seeing each other and how unrealistic that week felt. I was kind of hoping for more of a buildup to the week. Like, I was kind of hoping that maybe they were friends and then something happened and they just kind of have, like, this love affair for a week.
Or and even, then, like, a summer together?
Yeah. So I was kind of, like, disappointed in that because I feel like there should have been a little bit more depth. But the idea of these two teens who feel unwanted wanting to save each other is a really beautiful thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that they're young kids sharing those vulnerable feelings, that doesn't happen enough in, like, real life. So reading about it kind of, like, heals, like, you're, like, inner teen. So it was, but I liked it.
Mm-hmm.
I think she's a really good, and it's nice because, like, she's tasteful. Like, her books aren't just, like, for, like, the steam.
Yeah. Cause from what Reese said, from what I've heard about it, I was expecting it to be a lot steamier.
Me too. Actually.
And I could have used a little bit more.
I agree. I was expecting a little bit more. So, but it was still good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I feel like maybe if the sex scenes were maybe a little bit more in-depth, it would have been steamier, but I definitely feel like it was mild spice, for mm-hmm. sure.
For
it
sure.
It wasn't, like, out of control. And there was definitely a lot more plot than porn, as they say.
Mm-hmm. Who is they? I have never heard that before, Heather.
You've never heard that before? Yeah. There's, like,
I love it.
No, there's a lot of times that, like, you'll, like, look up book, like, Priest. Priest was porn, no plot.
That's, yes. So that's, you'll all see porn, zero plot.
Sometimes, like, readers will kind of, that's how they'll frame the book. So you can kind of get an idea of how steamy it is. And they'll say, well,
okay,
like, this book is just porn without plot. Or this one is, like, more plot than porn, but, like, it's still steamy.
So you know what you're getting into. Okay, yeah. I like that. I like that. Yeah, so this was
more heavy plot than and less
and
porn.
Not too much porn. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which is fine. It's like I was okay giving this book to my boss to read.
But yeah.
Like,
this is the kind of book that you don't judge someone else after they've read it.
Yeah.
Like, when I saw someone I know was currently reading Priest, I was like, girl, you know?
Yeah.
So, no judgment. I know something about you. You know what
exactly,
I mean?
Exactly. And you know what? It's really fun finding out people that you would never imagine love the smut. And I'm like, mm-hmm. you go, girl.
Mm-hmm.
A little smut is good for the soul.
Sure is. We all need a little spice in our lives.
Anyway, did I touch on everything?
Yes.
Are we good to go?
We made it. Yes.
That's all we have for you today. Amazing as always. If you like what you heard, please make sure to follow, subscribe, and rate and review the podcast on whatever platform you listen to. If you have any book recommendations or questions for us, you can email us at fullybookedcafpod@gmail.com. Also, be sure to follow us on TikTok, because that's still a thing, and Instagram at fullybookedcafpod to see our upcoming reads. Thanks for checking us out. And remember,
if you need us, we're fully booked. Bye.